Welcome to the Irish NFL Show with Brian O'Leary and myself, Conor Brophy, in association with our partner, QuinnBet. And a very special welcome on this episode to a distinguished guest, Steve White, NFL Network's chief reporter. NFL Network, of course, provides live coverage of the 2024 draft in Detroit from April 25th to 27th. And I know a lot of you on this side of the Atlantic will be watching it either on NFL Game Pass or through Sky Sports. Steve will be a critical component of that coverage, and we really do appreciate you taking the time, Steve, out from the preparation and the build-up to be with us. And I should tell the Irish NFL Show faithful, of course, that before we start, Steve has been on the show twice before and met Colm and Brian in Arizona at Super Bowl 57. As I was saying just before we started recording, I was just an undrafted Irish NFL Show free agent at that time. But I have heard the guy Steve mention on many an occasion how much they enjoyed meeting you. And thanks so much for rejoining the show with us this evening. Can we start, though, by checking in on one of what I think we all feel is one of the more intriguing storylines at the top end of the draft? Who are the Commanders going to select with that second overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly the dictator of the draft, right? We know the Bears have wanted to take Caleb Williams, a quarterback out of USC. Are the Commanders going to take Jaden Daniels, the LSU quarterback, or Drake May, or are they going to surprise us? I think it will be Jaden Daniels out of LSU. Again, I have no science. This is simply me connecting dots. But Cliff Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator there. And we look at the quarterbacks that Kingsbury has coached, you know, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, guys, and they're mobile, right? Guys who can get around in the pocket a little bit, because some of his schemes, you've got four wide receivers. You don't have a ton of great protection to protect a quarterback who's going to sit back in the pocket. Not that Drake May is a statue, but it seems like the evasive type of quarterback, which is more so the mold of today's NFL quarterback, might be to their liking, because I will tell you this, if they don't take him, you're going to see about five teams do everything in their power to get up to number three where New England picks to get him, but New England is not going to come off that pick. If he's there at three, the Patriots are going to take Jaden Daniels.
As you say, it really is the fulcrum around which the whole first round revolves, because we could have a lot of fun depending on which way that pick goes. What do you think, though, is behind, or is it just the usual smokescreens around some of the stories we heard about that day in Washington where Jaden Daniels, we're told in some reports, wasn't happy that all the other top prospects showed up too, thought that he might have the time to himself, and that seemed to have unsettled and changed the narrative a little bit around what the Commanders intended to do?
Look, even if that's 100% on point, the Commanders have had a week now to mend fences. Right, you know, even if that was kind of an instantaneous reaction, like, whoa, I thought this was going to be about me or this miscommunication, whatever happened, if Washington wants him, they can make him feel comfortable. Never forget, last year there was a lot of this going on with Houston and C.J. Stroud. Right, there was a lot of, hey, his visit there did not go well. Him and Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, were not seeing eye to eye. And that's why all of a sudden a lot of people had, okay, C.J. Stroud going to Carolina and Bryce Young going to Houston because of some of this type of conversation swirling around this. Lo and behold, what happened? C.J. Stroud goes to Houston, offensive rookie of the year. Everything is great. So, again, there's always time for fences to be mended, you know, and if Washington doesn't want him, like I said, they'll probably take Drake May. I don't think J.J. McCarthy's the guy there. And then there's several other teams that I've spoken to them that want to get their hands on Jaden Daniels, but I don't think he gets past New England at three.
Steve, another various different outlets with different mock drafts over the course of the last few weeks, but one of the consistent ones seems to be, and close ties to yourself with the Falcons, Dallas Turner has been proposed as the pick for the Falcons, a very defensive-orientated, coverage of the Falcons. And I know last week I was watching the coverage yourself and Brian Baldinger, and Baldinger was obviously speculating on another out in terms of the way they may go, but you're consistent using his defense. Is that the case? And are the Falcons open, do you believe, to potentially trading out of that position?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily the case. They surprised a lot of people by taking Bijan Robinson, a running back, at number eight last year. I mean, that's the thing. You know, Terry Fontenot, in his 3 years as general manager, has selected three offensive skill position players. And those, you talk to people around the league, they're like, the Falcons have used three top eight picks to select non-premium positions, right? Premium position, quarterback, left tackle, edge rusher, corner. Well, now they're back at number eight. They've got a defensive-minded head coach in Raheem Morris. They have not had a consistent pass rusher who can get to the quarterback since Sean Abraham 10 years ago, 10, 12, 15 years ago. So it seems like that would be the pick, but they could go quarter, right? This is, I do think defense is the issue or is the priority. But if all of a sudden they're screaming, we got Kirk Cousins, we got a two-year window, let's also get him Rome Odunze if he's there, you never know. I don't think this is a high-risk surprise pick. I do think it'll be defense. But you also mentioned the fact of them trading out of it. I could see a team, if some of these quarterbacks start to slip, or if all of a sudden there's a run on these offensive tackles, all of a sudden say, okay, let's trade up to 8. Atlanta moves back, and there's still going to be some of these edge rushers and some corners there, because if it's an offensive tackle run, it's going to be 4 or 5 offensive tackles and wide receivers still picked in there, pushing some of the players that they could get at 8, maybe down to 11 or 12 or 13 into that vicinity.
You touched on there the 3 wide receivers potentially going in the top 10, and a lot of people have touted with the Bears at 9 taking their Odunze, which kind of could lead to someone jumping the Bears into that 8 position to potentially get that final wide receiver of the 3.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going to be great about this draft, is you're going to see a run on certain positions. Like, we could see quarterbacks be the first 4 picks, right? So what does that do? That pushes the wide receivers and the offensive tackles, which are loaded. I mean, they're projecting up to 9 offensive linemen to go in the first round. So, you know, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. You know, I think Brian Thomas is somebody who could slip into that 15 too, the other wide receiver at LSU. I mean, people you talk about say his ceiling is absolutely insane, and then his overall athletic gifts are insane as well. So, yeah, I mean, if the Bears don't take a receiver at 9, there's someone who could trade out of that pick. They could take another position. It would be kind of crazy if Rome Odunze is there and they don't take him, knowing that they're taking Caleb Williams with the quarterback. But I think there's going to be a lot of action in terms of drafts. But as we started this conversation out with, what Washington does it too is the catalyst to set the table for the top 10 picks.
A follow on from what you've just been saying there, Steve, and you know, when you talk about the premium positions, one thing that I guess was interesting in free agency, and particularly interesting this year, was the number of interior D linemen getting big contracts, really getting paid. The likes of Christian Wilkins, Madubuike, Quinnen Williams, all these guys getting big paydays. From what you're saying, it sounds like there's going to be value if you're looking for a D lineman on the interior. And we've seen a couple of guys who've played a few positions and have that versatility, like maybe a Darius Robinson or one of those. Right. It's going to be value in that market.
Yeah, and you talk about this interior D lineman, they're going to get pushed. When you talk about value, they're going to get pushed to the back end when you talk about Darius Robinson, the back end of the first and into the second round, just because of this talent glut at quarterback, wide receiver, and offensive line. So, you know, I think by some of these teams locking up the interior linemen, you know, you could add Chris Jones in there as well. The priority to get one right now isn't as high, because, and the same also with some of these edge rushers. But you talk about Darius Robinson out of Missouri. He's someone who can play tackle, or he's someone who can play end. That's going to make him a more valuable prospect for teams that kind of play these fluid, you know, defensive fronts. And you know, again, if you can get somebody like that in the second round, because you're going to see at the back end of the first round teams trading up. I mean, that's where a team could trade up and get a Bo Nix, or trade up and get, you know, some of these interior linemen, or maybe if there's, you know, a medical question on guys. And I also think some guys are going to go higher than we think, like Leatu Latu, the edge rusher out of UCLA, players like that. You know, the mock drafts all kind of starting to look a little similar at this point, which means only 1/3 of everybody's mock drafts is pretty much going to be on point. And that's if you're hitting big.
He's a phenomenal athlete, Steve. I saw your interview with him the other day. I really enjoyed it. Seems like a really kind of nice guy, big personality. And I saw you laughing. And, you know, obviously, over this side of the Atlantic, we have a lot of rugby fans. There's pictures of him playing club rugby. And like you, I felt sorry for anybody to bring that down. He is a specimen.
Yeah, and you know, and I love what he said about rugby. And I think more and more coaches are going to start looking at it, because you saw, I think it's the Chiefs that just signed a rugby player.
Louis Riz-Zamas, yeah.
I think you're going to start to see more and more of this. You know, you saw Jordan Mailata, the offensive lineman for the Eagles. But with some of these tackling rules now being instituted in the NFL and just the whole physical body type we're seeing in some of these rugby players, there's going to be more open-mindedness to recruiting and developing these types of players, whether it's through the NFL's international program or a team signing somebody and say, we're going to keep him on our practice squad until he's ready, because so much of what happens in rugby transfers. And, you know, again, it's going to take some creative thinking coaches. Once there's some more success from some of these players transitioning, I think we might see more of that happening.
One thing we've also seen, Steve, I'm sure you might well be aware of, is a couple of Irish Gaelic football players trying their luck as well. And we've seen one through the IPP, the International Player Pathway you just mentioned there, sign with the New Orleans Saints, Charlie Smith. So it just goes to show you, like, these coaches are switched on. You know, ever since we saw, I guess, Brandon Aubrey make the breakthrough from being a soccer player for Notre Dame to the Cowboys over the last year, and the success that he had, there's an edge to be gained anywhere. And if you see a transferable skills, guys are going to jump on it.
Yeah, and again, and I think that's where the NFL's international expansion helps, because now we're, what, 20, almost 20 years in, 15 years in, of games being played in the UK, and a generation of young people growing up watching the sport and learning the sport and being intrigued in the sport. You know, there's some folks whose body types may not translate to European football, so to speak, right, to the soccer. This could be the perfect avenue for them. So, again, the more open-mindedness and the more expansion we're seeing, I think, again, it's going to lead to more international players in the NFL.
Steve, an intriguing character for this Thursday is Michael Penix Jr. You touched on Bo Nix there. There's a conversation on which one of them will be the fifth quarterback potentially taken, assuming the top four go in that particular order. Various different comments and, I suppose, suggestions, whether he's worthy of a first-round pick. It was interesting to see Daniel Jeremiah suggest, and you can't not see that tape in which he did against Texas in the semifinal or the championship game, and people are falling off because of the performance in the championship game itself. Where do you see on Michael Penix? Is he a realistic option? Is someone going to trade up potentially to take him in the first round?
I think so. Look, with Michael Penix, it is only because of medical reasons why there's even any question about him not being a top five, top 10 pick. You know, he's had the two ACL injuries and he's had a shoulder injury, all which knocked him out for the season. But you saw him last year at Washington. He didn't get hurt. He was a great player. He is the best passer. You know, maybe you could say Caleb Williams, but in terms of just overall pure passer, he is the best passer, you know, in this draft. So you take the medical out, that's one thing. But some teams, you just can't do that. I mean, you have to say, if we draft this guy in the first round and he ruptures that ACL again, what are we going to have here? You know, that's a big loss. But if you're a team like the Raiders that need a quarterback and you're sitting there at 13, you've got to think about that. If your doctors feel very good about his medical, what's the priority position for you? I mean, they really stacked up on the defensive front. You saw that kind of come to fruition over the course of last year. They added Christian Wilkins in free agency. So that's not your priority. At 13, are you going to take a corner when you need someone to challenge Aiden O'Connell in a division, you know, where you've got Patrick Mahomes or you've got Justin Herbert? So I think that's going to be an interesting discussion. Again, it all comes down to the medical. But I think if he gets past the Raiders at 13, you will see a team move up to get Penix. Like, let's say that the Vikings can't get up to get J.J. McCarthy. Well, the 24th pick, maybe you move up to 18 or 20 and say, We're going to take a look at this guy and see how it works out. They've got the type of team where he would be perfect. Good offensive line, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. So it's going to be very, very interesting with him, because talent-wise, he's someone who could be fantastic, but it's the medical thing that's the red flag.
Steve, anyone you think, from what you've been observing and people you've been talking to over the past couple of weeks, is going to go a lot higher than maybe some people think they will? And I'm thinking, you know, we all love to see the small school guys jumping out, like a Quinion Mitchell from Toledo or someone of that order.
Boy, it's tough. I think Leatu Latu, but, you know, you see his range, like, okay, he's a top 10 guy to a mid-20s guy, just depending on how the chips fall. But I think he's someone who nobody would be surprised if he went top 15. You know, his is a medical as well. Remember, he had the neck, which is why he was forced to medically retire for a year and a half. But he's been cleared by a lot of doctors. It's so hard to tell, because at the back end of the draft, you're going to see some people who are being mocked in the second round get picked because he fits a need for teams like the Ravens or a team like that. So it's hard for me to sit here and say I'm not Daniel Jeremiah or Mel Kiper, and I study these guys a ton of their film. I talk to the teams, but I really haven't been given the tea leaves to read as to somebody who might be a leaper who we're not looking at.
One of the aspects, maybe as a follow-up to that, that is probably interesting to us, and we'd love your take on it, is, you know, this doesn't seem to be talked about as a particularly deep draft for defensive players, and yet there's a lot of guys, you know, you got like, you know, really raw prospects, should we put it that way, that, you know, in the right setting and with the right coaching, you think could just be phenomenal. I'm thinking of, you know, some of the bigger D linemen. Again, we've already talked about D linemen. There's some pretty raw looking linebackers knocking around the place, but you think, you know, with the right direction, with the right coaching, you could really unearth a jewel here. You know, we've seen the likes of the Ravens do it over and over again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point, because scheme is what really determines, you know, who you're drafting. Does this guy fit exactly? Are we a cover two secondary where we need a zone cornerback? Are we the type of team where a guy like Darius Robinson, we can play him at tackle because we've got a Nick Bosa on the edge? We can roll him in, but then also roll him out, you know, depending on that type of fluidity and versatility you want out of your player. So it's interesting, though, how you said it's not that deep, maybe for guys on the defensive front. I think it is deep. I just think it's so top-heavy with the talent at tackle, at quarterback and wide receiver. It's pushing some of these talented edge rushers like Florida State's Jared Verse. Like, he's somebody who can get pushed into the 20s. Man, you watch that guy play, he's a monster, right? Like, normally in other years, you might be like, he's a top 10 type of guy because you don't have all these quarterbacks and you don't have all these offensive tackles. But because they're here, we got to get one of those now and get him on a rookie contract to help us with our salary cap. So I think you will probably see a couple positions like running back and safety get push deeper into the mid to the second round to the third round. But you're going to start seeing some of those defensive linemen, you know, those interior guys and edge guys start getting clicked off once you get to about the fifth pick of the second round. That's where you're going to start seeing the run on those types of players.
I mean, it seems amazing to say, as you touch on it there, given what we've seen over the last couple of years even, that it's a fair bet you might not even see a running back taken in the first two rounds.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair to say. I mean, last year, of course, we saw two taken with Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson, but you're just not hearing that right now. And I don't think NFL teams, we always talk about the devaluation of the running back. I don't think they sit there and say, we don't need a running back, because if that's the case, why all of a sudden in free agency were those the first guys off the books, right? Derrick Henry, Tony Pollard. I think that's what happened, is teams saw how stacked this draft is going to be, a quarterback, offensive tackle, wide receiver, and said, okay, let's go bring some veteran running backs in, which typically has not happened, right? Saquon Barkley, guys like that. And then we'll maybe get their backup in the fourth or fifth round in the draft. I think that's what's also impacting as to where some of these running backs will be drafted.
Steve Joerner covers last week. We got into a bit of a deep conversation on which GM is under the most pressure going into the draft on Thursday, and we suggested it was the Broncos and George Payton because of the nature of what's played out with Russell Wilson. We're not long removed since the Zach Wilson trade has been announced, so the question's kind of twofold now. Do you see them as a realistic player to move up this week? And bear in mind, they have no second-round pick. Would I have to include Patrick Surtain in a trade potentially to make it happen? Because by all accounts, they're not deferred from going for quarterback despite the Zach Wilson trade in the last hour.
You mean in terms of Denver moving up, maybe guys like J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't have the picks, right? They don't have a second-round pick this year. So you probably would have to include, from where they're having to come from, where are they at, 12?
12, yeah.
Yeah, from where they have to come from to get up to four, I mean, that's multiple first-round picks, you know, swapping this year's and next year's first-round pick. Probably next year's second round pick and maybe a player. to go from 12 to 4 or 12 to 5 or even 12 to 3. And this is after they've given up all these first round picks, not only for Russell Wilson, but for Sean Payton. So do you want, you just talked about George Payton possibly being under the microscope, even if they were to move up to get a J.J. McCarthy, they're not beating the Chiefs next year. They're not winning the division. So do you mortgage your future and draft picks? Well, you still remember, they've got like a $59 million cap hit for Russell Wilson next year, right? So do you give up those draft picks knowing you're not going to have a ton of cap flexibility? Do you give up Patrick Surtain and all that to get your quarterback this year? That is a significant decision they would have to make with all of those chips in play. Or do you play it out and say, okay, maybe if Michael Penix is there at 12, we take him and develop him steadily, but we keep our draft picks as they are as well. So, you know, that's a very, again, that's an intriguing situation because there's not that type of difference maker, and the Broncos do not have that type of roster to swing things like Houston did last year with the selection of a quarterback.
Is he the, would you suggest potentially he's the most pressure as GM going into the draft? Do you have any other GM which you could suggest is up there in terms of going into the draft with a lot of pressure?
Joe Douglas of the Jets has to nail it. I mean, this is kind of it for them. Woody Johnson has dropped that gauntlet already by basically saying, I'm going to win next year or I'm kind of cleaning house.
Yeah.
Some other teams, you look at some other teams at the top, it's hard to say because, again, you're at the top because you're not one player away. So I would think Joe Douglas, you know, we'll see what Kwesi Adofo-Mensah does at Minnesota. I don't think his job is in anywhere near jeopardy, but to make a decision, I'm sure it was organizational, to let Kirk Cousins go when you're on the kind of the playoff doorstep. To go after a young quarterback and to make the moves they've made, that decision may not rear its head this season, but 2 years from now, it could be a big decision determining the Vikings, the wind in their sails going forward, so to speak.
Steve, I heard a conversation earlier today, and it just put me in mind of a question I wanted to ask you just around the build-up to the draft. And we talk about GMs and coaches and whether they really fall in love with a particular player. But one thing that I love observing in the run-up is, you know, media and the draft nicks when they really get into it. You see the guys whose personality just wins people over. Like one name that I've heard is Mike Sanristil. Everybody seems to love Mike Sanristil. Think, you know, they could listen to him talk all day. Is there any player that you think from the ones you've met, the ones you've interviewed, there's a guy who's going to make the biggest difference in a locker room? I don't necessarily even mean talent-wise, but just someone who has that X factor from a personality, from a character standpoint that you've seen or heard.
Oh, man. There's a lot. I mean, Darius Robinson will blow you away. I mean, the defensive lineman, we've mentioned him a couple of times out of Missouri. I mean, physically, he looks like Superman at 6'6", 290 pounds. I mean, he makes Nick Bosa look kind of small, which is crazy. And then, you know, he's like an academic All-American. He's like this wholesome kind of religious guy. And so it's not that it's kind of this Puritan persona that comes at you, but just like the size. And you have a conversation with him and you see how smart he is. Everything's like, whoa, okay, this guy can fit into any locker room, just about whether it's a young roster or a veteran roster, and learn how to navigate his way through this. You know, like you mentioned, you saw the interview on TV with Leiatu Latu, the UCLA edge rusher. Just his energy is insane. His energy will work in most situations. You hope he goes into a place where he has the opportunity to succeed. It's, you know, this quarterbacks will be different. You know, I've sat with Caleb Williams, and he's his own guy. You know, he is going to be someone who is very kind. You know, you when you walk around USC and everyone just like, man, he speaks to the people who, you know, take out the garbage the same way he speaks to his coaches and this and that. And sometimes kind of that overly kind, overly generous, kind of free-spirited guy is not everybody's cup of tea. So, It's hard, but I mean, the guy I've personally spoken to, and I'm sure there's a million guys out there that have just absolutely, well, is Darius Robinson. I mean, he's a pretty special dude, very mature. He'll fit in right away.
I loved what he said after he started to get a lot more pop following the way he showed up at the Senior Bowl. It's like, right, I'm still the same player. You guys just, you're only seeing the tape now.
And that's what it is. And again, the position flexibility, the fact that he's a 290-pound defensive end. He can play on the edge. He can get after the quarterback. He can play interior. A lot of things he can do. And again, if he falls into the right scheme, like if he goes to a team like the Ravens, oh, man. I mean, the way they develop those types of players, we've been talking about him for a long time.
Yeah, that's not fair. I don't necessarily want to see that happen, I have to say, as someone who's not a Ravens fan. Steve, if possible, I think you've made us even more excited about the build-up to the draft. I can't wait for it to roll around. We were only six sleeps away now at time of recording or just over. Really looking forward to continuing to see and hear your coverage in NFL Network's coverage in the run-up to and, of course, on draft night itself. Thank you so much for taking time out with us on the Irish NFL Show.
Always great, guys. Thanks for having me.